Don't frighten us by telling us the facts, 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 the facts. We must be the great arsenal of democracy. For us, this is an emergency as serious as war itself. We must apply ourselves to our task with the same resolution, the same sense of urgency, the same spirit of patriotism and sacrifice as we would show were we at war.
For 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark in the great state of Delaware, I'm Bill Humphrey, and thanks for listening. The following episode was recorded on June 3rd, 2018, and produced by me at my studio in Newton, Massachusetts. This week, Nate and Rachel joined me to discuss Illinois' recent ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment and the long struggle to push it across the finish line. That's all coming up on Arsenal for Democracy. Episodes are available for download on Tuesdays at arsenalfordemocracy.com and from iTunes or Stitcher. We air the show in Delaware on 91.3 FM and stream it simultaneously from WVUD.org on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at AFD Radio or like us on Facebook. This is Arsenal for Democracy. You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me again in studio this week is Nate. Hey, Nate.
Hey, Bill.
And joining us, as always, on the line from Idaho is Rachel. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Nate.
Quick announcement at the top of the show. We're going to be going to a half-hour format for the rest of the summer on this show. I know some people will be a little disappointed that we're not going to be going for the full 50 or so minutes each week, but we decided that was a good switch for the rest of the summer, and we'll see in the fall what we do then. This week, we're going to be talking about the Equal Rights Amendment because the state of Illinois sort of suddenly finally ratified the Equal Rights Amendment. Which is an amendment that's been floating around since, well, there have been various versions since the 20s, but the version that passed out of Congress in 1972 has been meandering its way through the various state legislatures of the country. Congress had set a sort of arbitrary deadline initially for when the ratification needed to happen, but that's not part of the amendment text, and it's not clear that constitutionally Congress can set limits like that. By the time it sort of completely stalled out, it had gotten up to 35 out of the necessary 38 ratifications by 1977, and it had kind of stalled for a while. And then a few years back, I believe, I think it was Nevada passed a ratification, and then as we said, Illinois just this past week, end of May, beginning of June, they ended up ratifying it. So we're now one state away. Not like the greatest map in the world if you're trying to guess which states might be actual viable pathways there. The ones that are still left on the table are Utah, Arizona, Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, and Virginia. I think most people are guessing that based on the current composition of legislatures and governors and so forth, probably Virginia is the best bet to getting it through. Virginia has previously, a while ago at this point, had passed it through one house. I think it does probably have to be passed through both chambers in the same session in order for it to count, but that would bring it to 38. Then the question is, does that count because of how long it took and that there were these alleged deadlines extended by Congress once or twice, that it is well passed. Further complicating things, as we'll talk about, is that some states had actually tried to roll back their ratifications. So let's get into it a little bit. Rachel, we were talking before the show about like what actually is the Equal Rights Amendment, because it kind of seems like maybe it's some huge complicated thing or something like that. It's pretty much one line basically, except for the implementation lines, which are also relatively simple. What is the actual Equal Rights Amendment?
So Section 1 is, equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. And then in Section 2, the Congress shall have the power to enforce, by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. And then section three, the amendment will take effect 2 years after the date of ratification. So it seems very, very simple. It's just saying men and women are equal under the law and the rights shall not be denied or abridged for any person based on sex.
And
so very, very simple.
Quite a few states, including Massachusetts, for example, already have constitutional equal rights amendments, various provisions preventing discrimination or different equal, unequal treatment under the law for sex, race, etc. There's quite a few things in the Massachusetts one. I believe, if I heard correctly, Delaware is like still considering doing a state version. Delaware is one of the states that's already ratified the Equal Rights Amendment for the federal level, but they never, as far as I'm aware, implemented it at the state level. As I said, there had been versions of this floating around since the 1920s. The final version that has gone around, got passed in by Congress in 1972. Ratification began literally that same day in Hawaii because the legislative session hadn't closed for the day in Hawaii when they got the news. Benefit of time zones. And then, as I said, it was working its way through to 1977, but at a certain point there was this backlash whipped up against it. It had always been somewhat controversial, even within feminist movements, when, back in the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s, and so on. But then there was this sort of conservative grassroots, so to speak. It probably was pretty astroturfed, I'm guessing, to try to like organize against this. And that's what I think a lot of people remember. The reason that there's this has been this strategy to try to get those final three states for ratification going since the early 90s is because of the 27th Amendment to the United States Constitution, which was one of the 12 Bill of Rights proposals from 1789, of which only 10 ended up being adopted right away. But one of them had been partially ratified by a number of states, but never completed. I don't know if this is actually what happened, but the story there is that a college student wrote a paper saying that it could still be ratified and didn't like the grade that he got on the paper because the professor thought it was unrealistic or factually incorrect or whatever. So he launched a nationwide campaign to try to get that ratified. And that's our most recent constitutional amendment, and our most boring constitutional amendment, which is the one that says that members of Congress can't raise their own pay in the same session. Like, they can raise it for the next, the next Congress or whatever, but they can't raise it for like during that same one to give themselves a pay raise. They have to be reelected after voting through a pay raise, which is fine, whatever.
That's fair, I guess.
Like, that's why it was proposed at the beginning, and I'm sure that the reason it didn't get passed at the beginning is because probably a lot of the people knew that they were going to be in Congress very shortly, because it was a pretty limited pool of people that were getting into Congress from 13 states at the time. They did ratify that in 1992. That was basically a 10-year push from the early 1980s through to 1992, 202 years to get that ratified. Differences there, though, again, that the Equal Rights Amendment theoretically had this self-imposed kind of deadline by Congress that it's not sure whether that's really constitutionally valid. And then there's also all these states that tried to pull back on it. There was a number of states that tried to like cancel their ratifications after the fact or like set sort of arbitrary deadlines. Five of the states tried to recall their ratifications, but there is no precedent for that constitutionally. One of them is Idaho, though. Rachel, talk to us about the Idaho rescission.
So Idaho ratified the ERA March 24th, 1972. So the day after Congress approved it.
2 days, I think.
Two days. Oh, yes, you're right. And then 5 years later, February 8th, 1977, they voted to rescind it. There was a 1981 court decision, Idaho v. Freeman, in the U.S. District Court of the District of Idaho. So they kind of upheld the rescission. However, SCOTUS didn't make a decision on it until after the 1982 deadline. So it rendered it absolutely moot, And so it vacated Idaho v. Freeman, wiping it off the law books and rendering it useless as a precedent, a partial victory for those challenging Idaho v. Freeman. So as far as the precedent is set, the only interaction a state can have with an amendment is ratifying it. And once they ratify it, they're done. They can no longer mess with it in any way. So rescission is basically unconstitutional and has no legal validity.
And I think that is, it speaks to a much bigger constitutional principle than just this specific issue of, you know, does that count or whatever? Because if you think about it, if any state can call back an amendment at any time, like after it's already been, because, you know, where does that stop? Like, you know, can they only rescind their ratification if it hasn't been ratified by 3/4 of the states? Can they rescind their ratification after it's been adopted by the entire country and enshrined in the Constitution? Like, can you call back the 14th Amendment or whatever? Like,
it might be too late.
Right. And you know, we would say, no, of course not. But like in the early constitutional U.S. history, one of the big struggles was about that issue of like nullification and can states secede from the Constitution and the Union based on the fact that like, well, we opted into it, so we should be able to opt out. Yeah. And we fought an entire civil war over that question. Yeah. So this is a big issue if they don't resolve whether or not this is valid.
I mean, there were multiple nullification crises pre-Civil War, so and
usually involving extensive federal troops, yeah, like to sort that out. So it's a big problem, and you know, Idaho, we know, would be certainly primed to make a big fuss over whether or not they can bail out on this. So I guess let's talk a little bit. I mean, we've said what the like principle of the thing was, and there were, you know, all kinds of feminist activists, nationally famous, state famous women working on this, lots of celebrities pushing it in the original push in the 70s. You had Presidents Nixon, Ford, and Carter pushing it, bipartisan effort by three presidents to try to get this through. Obviously not really being championed by the successors in the Reagan administration, certainly. They were very closely linked with Phyllis Schlafly, who sort of did the Tradwife uprising against this amendment. Rachel, do you want to talk a little bit about like what their alleged complaints were with this, I guess? And I guess there were some feminists who objected at the time, although we'll talk about, we've been talking off air before about why their concerns may have made some sense to them at the time, but do not make sense in the current context.
Yeah, so Phyllis Schlafly kind of beat the drum of whataboutism, basically. So she was saying that women would be subject to conscription and would be drafted into the army in combat roles in future wars. They said that there would be unisex bathrooms, which doesn't sound so scary. It would invalidate alimony and eliminate the tendency for mothers to obtain custody over their children in divorce cases. And it said same-sex couples would be able to get married if the amendment were passed.
So is literally any of that still like, you know, not made irrelevant by other things at this point?
We were talking a little bit about alimony, and it sounds like it's kind of still a thing, but it definitely is a two-way street. So if the woman makes more, then she is on the hook for alimony. So I don't know if that's terrifying in Schlafly's world. It probably is. So it's kind of funny, their tactics. They took homemade bread, jams, and apple pies to the state legislators with the slogans, "Preserve us from a congressional jam, vote against the ERA sham," and "I am for mom and apple pie." So all these seem so silly now. I don't think any woman is, even most women don't even have the option of being in the home and kind of controlling that domestic sphere anymore. So it sounds like a lot of her fears have come to fruition, but it's more due to our capitalist landscape at this time and how labor rights have been eroded over the years, have much more contributed to this, to the problem of women in the workplace and the terrible conditions thereof.
It's sort of, it's like there was the concern trolling by like the Phyllis Schlafly people, right, which has been rendered irrelevant, as you mentioned. Like, we've got women in the armed forces, we've got gay marriage, we've got, you know, well, we still have mostly equal bathrooms, but also it wouldn't be the end of the world if there was more unisex bathrooms, but that's become a whole separate debate as well. You know, we've got the alimony situation has changed, but not necessarily in a bad way. And then there's the sort of maybe more like legitimate concerns from some of the feminists. But then again, was it really legitimate? Like, there was a lot of them who are like, this is bad for working women because there's special labor protections for working women or something like that. And well, there's a few responses that I have to that, which is, first of all, like, one of the biggest champions of this was Shirley Chisholm, you know, the African-American congresswoman who ran for president eventually. Awesome, like, American hero and icon. Also, like, her parents were immigrants. Her mom worked as a seamstress and a, like, domestic worker. Her dad worked as an industrial factory worker. I think she was in touch with the issues of working people. Like, that's not really in debate, and she was all for the Equal Rights Amendment. So that's sort of like strike one against that rationale. Strike two, obviously, as I think Rachel was maybe just alluding to there, like, you know, if you're saying like, oh, we have these special workforce protections for women, well, A, you should be trying to get like good, safe, and, you know, regulated workplaces for everyone, not just women. And the Equal Rights Amendment might even make that easier. You know, we want to be going for the, you know, safe standards and practices for everyone, not lowest common denominator. But B, lowest common denominator has become the situation anyway, regardless of the Equal Rights Amendment. A lot of these protections, like I was reading about, you know, that they had won, especially, this is especially in the early phases of the ERA debates, you know, back in the 20s or 30s or whatever. There were all these special protections for like women laborers. But they're things that have all been completely eliminated now, either because they're antiquated or because the labor force, the labor market has been completely, like, you know, any regulations that were passed as part of the New Deal or whatever have been shredded and eviscerated, or if they were part of the progressive movement, that's pretty much all been destroyed in the combined conservative Reagan Revolution era stuff, the, you know, Taft-Hartley era stuff, and just the basic, like, neoliberal drive more recently. You know, the notion that, like, oh, women now can be forced to work at night, like, that's not going to be, you know, if they were protected from working at night, like, that's long since gone out the window, right? If you say, like, oh, women, you know, they were protected from having to lift heavy things, which, if I recall correctly, that's based on, like, junk medical science of the time claiming that, like, you know, their internal organs would fall out if they weren't being dainty enough or whatever. Like, that's obviously stupid, but also, like, the workforce and labor market has changed. And, you know, also, like, kind of relating to the alimony stuff is, like, that this, you know, a lot of women, often by necessity, have had to go into the workforce or chosen to go into the workforce. And so this, like, dichotomy has been to a large degree already outmaneuvered and erased by things around it, right? So the arguments that I think were, and Rachel, you know, I think you were saying this as well off the air beforehand, like, they don't really make that much sense even at the time, but, like, they definitely don't make sense now. Is that a fair assessment?
Right. And like you were saying, a lot of those protections from the 1920s are very infantilizing. And it seems like Schlafly was also kind of infantilizing women by suggesting that they're not tough enough to go out into the workforce and interact with men. Like you said, the word dainty is very much in play there. So I think what Shirley Chisholm and a lot of the pro-ERA people were doing, they were saying, we don't need to be infantilized. We just want to be treated equally. However we choose to interact with, like, the labor force, or whether we choose to kind of inhabit that domestic sphere instead. It's all about choice. And I think Phyllis Schlafly said women were basically too dumb to make that choice, and so had to have it made for them by a bunch of men in Congress.
Yeah, I mean, if the argument is, like, you know, that housewives' work will somehow be devalued by this equal rights thing, or that it will push people out of the house, like, well, that's already the reality for a lot of people, and we need to be fighting to make that recognized and compensated fairly as it is. If the argument is, like, that, you know, we need to have better, safer workplaces and working conditions for, like, women, it's like, no, that needs to be true for everyone, and the Equal Rights Amendment probably can only help in that direction. These protests at the time were pretty raucous affairs, some of them by the pro-ERA people, but a lot of them were pretty crazy protests, but, you know, out of control protests by the Schlafly-ite faction. Nate, you wanted to talk a little bit about that, some stuff from your family history and also some of the stuff from the articles, because there was an article about the Illinois ratification that just happened and like flashing back to one of the earlier protests there.
Yeah, I'm just reading from the Chicago Tribune here. They sort of contrasted the sort of festive and smiling atmosphere from the recent passage compared to sort of the failure in June of 82. A dozen ERA supporters held a sit-in demonstration over the state's failure to adopt the amendment, prompting a raucous and abrupt adjournment. Apparently then a Republican representative, James Kelly, who weighed in at 290 pounds, apparently stepped on someone. He claimed it was an accident. They said it was deliberate. He said, "I'm not a gazelle, and I stepped on one of them." And I think there was like some animal blood thrown around and a sit-in and things like that. And then this was interesting, you know, and Phyllis Schlafly was there as well. People were chanting. They wrote Thompson Remember or something, referring to, I guess, one of the Republican lawmakers. And then he tried to claim, oh, this is a vile act. This reminds me of painting swastikas on synagogues. And it's like, this is not exactly the same thing. Republican Governor James Thompson.
Very, very dramatic.
ERA supporter was accused by critics of not doing enough to gain his passage. So maybe they felt betrayed by him or something like that. And so that was sort of the situation then. And yeah, as I was explaining to Bill, I was talking with my grandmother about this a little bit. My father, my grandmother was involved in reproductive rights advocacy at the time, and they went to these protests, including one down in Illinois. So I don't think it was this exact same one. It might have been a little earlier, but they were telling me about the people that were, you know, just like incoherent with rage, screaming, and including a lot of women who are, you know, as sort of on this traditional lifestyle type of thing, where they're getting riled up by Schlafly and were very angry. But so that was sort of the situation then, and it looks like there are some elements of that sort of cultural divide that undoubtedly sort of still do exist in America today, and they're still kind of driving a lot of our political conflicts. So it's interesting to see sort of the history there of, sort of these protests and things like that. So I thought that was interesting.
Now, Rachel, we've talked about how there's now basically one state left to go. If you're following the model that the rescissions don't count and that there's no time limit, if, say, Virginia, for example, were to ratify the amendment now, and we get the 3/4 of the states on board, what do you think happens from here? I mean, anything good, or are we headed for a real bad situation, constitutional crisis wise?
I know. I think just the way our Congress is acting these days, I think we would be headed for a constitutional crisis. Just I don't know where, if the political will is there on the federal level to actually get this thing passed.
So it doesn't have to get passed by Congress again. It just, right. It would just be in effect now. And in obviously effect, I'm not really holding my breath for this Congress to like do anything to enact legislation enforcing it. People could start like suing, saying that their rights have been violated under, you know, equal protection grounds based on the new 28th Amendment, that this would be. But like, you know, my question is, is it just going to be a bunch of lawsuits back and forth over the validity of the ratification process? Normally the courts really hate weighing in on stuff like that, because their position is like, well, we're also one of the branches of government, so we shouldn't really be weighing in on like fundamental, you know, powers and roles stuff, as you know, to the extent possible. So obviously sometimes they do, but that's my thought, is that there would just be this cyclone of suits and countersuits just over the validity of the ratification itself, and whether it is in effect and can be held up. If someone goes all the way to the Supreme Court saying their rights have been violated under the equal protection clause of this, like, and then are they going to just say, actually, this is not, we don't even have to, like, we have no standing on this because this isn't a valid amendment? Like, that's what I'm wondering. Nate, do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, I don't know exactly what would if it goes in the Constitution, If it's an
official amendment, the Constitution, that's the question, right? You know, because that would be a constitutional question, right? It's a constitutional crisis if they're disputing whether or not it's even in the Constitution.
Well, I guess because it's not in the text that there was even supposed to be a deadline. So I think the deadline is artificial and can therefore be ignored. But I don't know if others will see it that way.
Just from the article, they make the explicit comparison to the 1992 ratification of the 27th, which occurred more than 203 years after its passage by Congress. But now, in terms of the deadline, I wonder if that was just sort of a political deadline, or is that... Yeah, I don't know exactly what the deal was there.
I'm unclear on why they established it in the first place. That has not
we may made have to itself do some more research.
Yeah,
into
material.
That,
yeah. But because they originally the Wikipedia here, they had originally set a ratification deadline of March 22nd, 1979. But it's like, why?
And this, of course, happened after that deadline. But there was an expiration deadline, 82. So
right, they extended the deadline. Yeah. Yeah.
I do want to note from the end of this article, sort of interesting quote here. Back in 1982, the state's first female House Majority Leader was a relatively green lawmaker. Democratic State Rep Barbara Flynn Currie recalls the fight among activists at the Capitol as a, quote, very, very hot time. And as I mentioned, there was like a hunger strike. There were people chaining themselves to things. So what's different now that the Equal Rights Amendment has been approved in Illinois 36 years later? When you see who's running for public office, there are women all over the ballot, and that's a change from 2 years ago or 4 years ago, said Currie, who isn't running for re-election after 40 years in office. So I think the general impetus is to say we need to be counted, we need to be heard, and I think that helps explain the push. So that's, you know, definitely a huge part of it, I would say, and... Maybe.
And I think it's got a good shot of going through in Virginia because,
yeah,
you know, as we said, that,
be
that's
held up as an element.
Of those states that are still left to put this through, you know, the state legislature there is controlled by the Democrats right now after last year's election. They just managed to get the Medicaid expansion passed, which was a big, you know, a huge deal because it's a very narrow, close control of the chambers there. I'm not even sure if I can't remember because it went back and forth. The Democrats may not control both chambers right now, but they have enough probably to get this through. And they have passed through one of the chambers in the recent past, relatively speaking. And, you know, it's definitely a state that's trending toward the Democrats, and that would probably help the Democrats in going forward to hold on to their majorities. You know, so I think this is definitely a distinct possibility that it could go through. And, you know, that's where we're at on that. We're fully supportive of that happening. And, you know, I guess come what may with the constitutional crisis possibility, I hope there isn't one, but it's definitely possible and probable, I think, that there will be. All right, well, we are out of time. Next week, we'll be back with another half-hour episode, probably talking about sports betting. We'll see. And that is going to do it for us this week. Rachel, thank you so much for being here on the line.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
And Nate, thanks for being here in studio.
Thanks, Bill.
That's all the time we have this week. Tweet us your comments at AFDRadio or email AFDRadio@gmail.com. The show is available for download from ArsenalForDemocracy.com on Tuesdays. You can hear it on the air in Delaware from 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark every Tuesday at noon Eastern. Our theme music was composed for us by Stuntberg. If there are articles or papers discussed in an episode, we usually post links to them on ArsenalForDemocracy.com along with each episode. From my studio in Newton, Massachusetts, I'm Bill Humphrey, and I approve this message.